WDET is supported by Motor City Seafood, a fresh seafood wholesaler and distributor of premium sustainable seafood to area restaurants, now offering products for local home delivery and curbside pickup. Learn more about how to order online at MotorCitySeafood.com.
From the Midtown Detroit studios of WDET, this is Detroit Today.
It has been 1 year to the day since Governor Gretchen Whitmer announced the first confirmed coronavirus cases here in Michigan. We'll hear and share stories all hour about how life has changed this past year, what we've learned, and what's giving us hope a year later. And we'll talk about what people who are fully vaccinated against the virus can do and still shouldn't do. That's all next on Detroit Today, right after the news. Today on 101.9 WDET, I'm Jake Neer in for Stephen Henderson. 1 year ago today, Governor Gretchen Whitmer called a late-night press conference just hours after Michigan's presidential primary election. Her announcement would turn all of our lives upside down. The state had confirmed the first cases of the novel coronavirus in Michigan. In the days, weeks, and months ahead, schools, offices, restaurants, places of worship, concert venues, and most other gathering places would close in order to try to slow the spread of the virus. Hospital ICUs would fill with sick and dying patients. Many others would lose their livelihoods. In the hope that we as a society would band together to get through all of this together, would quickly vanish as political leaders sought and took advantage of opportunities to politicize the deadliest public health crisis most of us have ever lived through. Most of us didn't realize all of it would upend our lives for more than a year, and in total, 16,000 Michiganders are dead. And an untold number of others are still dealing with the long-term lingering effects of COVID-19. Today, though, 1 year later, there is some hope on the horizon. We now have three vaccines approved for emergency use. The vaccine rollout is finally starting to gain steam, and the number of cases, hospitalizations, and deaths have been trending downward, although there is some concern about them coming back up right now. Optimistic projections are that the worst of the pandemic may be behind us, but we are not out of the woods yet. We want to hear from you all hour today. Please share your own stories of the very first days of the pandemic and the ways your life changed dramatically. Do you remember what you were doing the day or the days before everything came to a screeching halt? What about the days right after? Are you feeling hopeful and optimistic 1 year later? Or are you still feeling wary or unsure of the future? What are some of the unexpected silver linings of all this pandemic in your life? As always, the number to call in is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. And you can also leave your comments on Twitter using the hashtag Detroit Today. I'll start with my own personal feeling of hope right now. Today, on the one-year anniversary of the pandemic coming to Michigan, my 73-year-old dad, who is about to turn 74, is getting his first dose of the vaccine today, just a couple weeks after my mom became fully vaccinated. And I'm just so happy to see all of the relief and the emotions that people are having as they and their loved ones start receiving this real miracle of science that will possibly help us get some of our lives back. And a little later on in the show, we will hear from Lena Sun, a Washington Post health reporter, about what fully vaccinated people are able to do and will be able to do once they get their shots. But first, I want to welcome Dustin Walsh of Crain's Detroit Business, who has a new piece out titled The Week When Everything Changed and how the business community lived it. Dustin, welcome back to Detroit Today.
Thanks, Jake.
So before we get into your piece that you wrote, which I really love that piece, I'm hoping that you might be willing to reflect a little yourself on this past year in your own life. You know, what have been some of the biggest challenges for you, and maybe some of the things that you're grateful for through all this? One of the things that I thought of when I knew you were coming on the show, we are both dads of little kids, which adds this big kind of wrinkle in trying to get through all this. But how has this all played out for you?
Well, yeah. So actually, the week that I wrote about, the week that sort of changed everything, I was actually in Florida for my mother's wedding with my family. I went to Disney World on March 12th, 2 days after cases had been, discovered here in Michigan, which, you know, was kind of a blowout fight between my wife and I about what the right thing to do was. But we went anyway. I lost, shockingly. So it played out very different for me in that first week. I sort of was on the beach and life seemed to be carrying out pretty normally. Where back home, you know, behind the scenes, things were sort of unfolding and got messy fast. But for the year, you know, it was a year like everyone else experienced confusion, not really sure what was okay to do, particularly in the early months. And then it was, you know, the upsides are obviously, as you mentioned, I have twin 5-year-olds. I got to spend an inordinate amount of time with them,
yep.
which is great and trying and difficult. But you know, that's time that I wouldn't have had otherwise. And then as it wore on, it became even more challenging, right? School, kindergarten for 5-year-olds, virtual kindergarten was not a good thing. We ended up pulling our children out. And just really, it's been a difficult and extremely trying time of trying to navigate all of this. And I think that's for, you know, for everyone, you know, not just me or you or anyone else, but to every single citizen of the United States and maybe the world has had to face something they've never done before. And, you know, we'll have opportunities to reflect on it when this is all over, hopefully, and we'll be able to really pick out the good and bad.
And I want to make sure that we focus a lot of the time today during the show on some of the ways that this has, you know, again, those silver linings that a lot of us have found, some of the blessings and all of this and the positives. But I think it's important to also note near the top, too, again, that number that 16,000 people here in Michigan are dead. I mean, that's roughly as if the entire city of Hazel Park had been wiped off the map in 1 year. Or for folks in Macomb County, if the entire city of Mount Clemens had been wiped off the map in 1 year. I mean, try to help us put into context sort of the scale of the tragedy that we've experienced here in Southeast Michigan specifically. Because sometimes I feel like it actually is really hard for people to conceptualize this kind of mass death, because for most people, it's not happening in front of their eyes. It's taking place over a prolonged period of time, sort of out of view, unlike something like 9/11, let's say. But of course, just here in Michigan, we're talking about more than 5 9/11s over the course of 1 year.
Right. And I think that's the hard thing is, you know, you often hear the term K-shaped recovery, right? And so, you know, what that really meant is for 75% of the population, the pandemic from a economic standpoint has impacted no one. You're either doing the same or maybe even better, economically than you were before. But for the other 25%, your life has been upended. And I think that economic divergence is sort of similar to what we've seen from a health standpoint as well. You know, if you're living in the city of Detroit, you've lost a lot of friends and maybe some family because of just the impact, you know, and it depends on it's geographic and socioeconomic, how this thing has played out. You know, I don't have a giant long laundry list of people that I know that have died from COVID-19. I have one person really that was, you know, that I knew well enough to you know, have feelings about. And that's not common for some people. Some people have had, you know, dozens of people die. And so, you know, that's what's been so challenging, particularly as this virus became politicized, is that there are people that literally are doing things that they view as jumping through hoops to make political leaders happy, but they're not, because they haven't been visible, or hasn't been visible, the other side, the real human suffering that has occurred in really pockets of our communities. You know, and that's I think the been the biggest challenge. But yeah, you cannot sugarcoat 16,000 Michiganders are dead from this in 1 year's time. It's an astounding number and sad, and we should all, you know, remember that as this moves forth.
Yeah. You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Jake Neer, and for Stephen Henderson today, I'm talking with Dustin Walsh, who covers economic issues for Crain's Detroit Business. Dustin wrote a piece in Crain's titled "The Week When Everything Changed and How the Business Community Lived It." It takes a very close look at a lot of personal stories around the first days of the pandemic, and those stories are what we want to hear from you as well, the listeners today. Call in and tell us, you know, how your life has changed over the past years. What are your memories of the first days of this pandemic coming to Michigan 1 year ago? What was happening in your life before the world came to this screeching halt? And of course, how did it affect you and your family? How are you feeling now, 1 year later? Are you hopeful, pessimistic? Are you tired? Maybe all of the above? We especially want to hear what's making you feel hopeful today on the anniversary of the first confirmed cases of COVID in Michigan. And, you know, what are some of those silver linings, the unexpected blessings you found during this pandemic? Again, the number is 313-577-1019. That's 313-577-1019. You can also use the hashtag Detroit Today on Twitter. And I want to start with Elise in Hamtramck today. Elise, welcome to Detroit Today.
Hi, thank you.
Go ahead.
Hello. Oh, so a year ago today, I remember hearing Governor Whitmer announcing those first cases, and I had actually just landed a really amazing job working in the home of a private family. And I think on my second day, they announced that the schools were closing. So they informed me, you know, we're hopping on a plane, we're going to Florida, and you're coming with us.
Wow.
So I said, okay, you know, brand new job. You know, we thought 2 weeks. I was there for 5 weeks, you know, full quarantine, couldn't go even to the grocery store. Everything was delivered. No walks, no nothing. Beach was closed, the whole deal. You know, and I had known this family for about 3 days and then fully quarantined with them for, I was there for 5 weeks. And then, you know, came back and things started to feel a little bit more normal, but obviously it got more and more dangerous. And, yeah, so basically just, you know, coming out of that was so wild, just being stuck down there,
yeah.
You know, and then the feeling of wanting to be closer to my family and friends that I was so worried about, but even if I was here, I wouldn't be able to see them anyway. So it was kind of this, you know, emotional, like push and pull all the time. So,
yeah. Yeah. Elise, I really appreciate you calling in and sharing that story. And, Dustin, sounds like, not surprising, I guess, a lot of Michiganders down in Florida in March of last year. You know, it's similar, sort of interesting that that's similar to your story, that you're both down in Florida for that. But I want to, also take Ben here in St. Clair Shores. Ben, welcome to Detroit Today.
Hello, Jake. Good morning.
Yeah, what would you like to say?
I spoke with Stephen about, well, shortly after the governor shut us down this month last year, and I had already been wearing the surgical mask. I watched PBS TV overseas, so I saw something wicked this way coming. Plus, where I work at, it helps to keep the tailpipe emissions from killing me. I also observed at work before I went out on medical leave that a lot of people were just totally ignoring the advice of the doctors and science, seeing that close up. It was a blessing. I was already self-sequestered after my wife died 5 years ago, and recognizing human behavior, having worked in the social work field, it's disconcerting. Going forward, I don't think it's going to be great. Even after we get all of this vaccination done, people are still going to be slothful about good hygiene.
Mm.
Thanks.
Well, Ben, I really appreciate you calling in and sharing that story. And Dustin, I'm really glad that we got Ben in before we got into your piece, because part of what he's talking about there was the way that employers reacted to this, especially early on in the pandemic. Talk a little bit more from a 10,000 foot view of how employers sort of were trying to grapple with this in the days right after the governor's announcement and before she sort of made the decision to shut so many sectors down, which took some of the decision making out of their hands. But when they were in these first few days were really tough for a lot of business owners because they were making life and death decisions.
Right. And I think that's that's been the hard part of kind of revisiting this is I think when you're in the moment of distress and sort of as this thing is playing out, you either kind of were in two camps, right? You either were sort of ignoring things because, again, we had seen, SARS, we had seen Ebola, like those things killed people, but it generally wasn't a widespread problem. So we sort of sat on this perch in the United States, right, of not seeing these things wreak the havoc they had in other countries, whether that been West Africa or parts of Europe, with the previous or even Asia with previous viruses. So we sort of had this, I think, and particularly I did as well, I think, in the beginning of like, okay, well, maybe this isn't as bad. I think when things changed for me was, I cover the automotive industry quite heavily, and sort of watching their behavior in China, how they were sort of locking things down and how things were really difficult, particularly in Wuhan, as that virus just decimated in the early days. And then by the time it reached the United States, I think business leaders were starting to go, okay, what do I do now? Like, do we shut down? There was just this knowledge vacuum, right? Because we knew nothing about the virus, right? No one was wearing masks. We were really scared of it being touch related, right? So we used to like spray down our groceries. I think that was the difference. And you looked at the automotive manufacturing plants and they didn't want to shut down, obviously, because they wanted to keep working and keep producing vehicles. And so there were these things where it's like, okay, is this dangerous? Is this not dangerous? And really watching people react to that was interesting. In my piece, for instance, I talked to two interviews really stuck out with me. One was Sami Ayed, the owner of Layla, and a few other restaurants. He was flying home on March 11th, so the day after the first cases were diagnosed here in Michigan, from Tennessee, visiting friends. And he had listened to a podcast, right, as you do on a plane. And he had heard an epidemiologist, a very popular epidemiologist, Michael Osterholm. And he talked about sort of the fear and what the potential was here. And as he said, he was paralyzed by it. He immediately wrote an email on the plane to his management to talk about shutting down a restaurant that only a few weeks earlier had been nominated for a James Beard Foundation Award.
Right.
Was by far the most popular restaurant in Michigan, was really seeing that play out. And he knew, after listening to that this was going to be bad, so he was already making the decision of whether he needed to shut down. And then Ron Hall Jr. Ron Hall, he doesn't like to go by Jr. anymore. he's the CEO of Bridgewater Interiors, which is a joint venture with Adient that makes seats. They were on the shop floor, just trying to show confidence, like, hey, like, we don't know what's going to happen, but we're here with you as executives. And he was terrified. And by the way, he's an Army veteran that served in Kuwait and Iraq.
Yeah.
That he said it was the first time he's ever been scared in his professional life since serving in the Middle East.
Yeah, it's interesting that you isolated those two stories. Those were exactly the two stories that stuck out to me and that I wanted to talk to you about. And we'll talk more about them, but we need to take a quick break really quick. And after this, we are going to continue this conversation with Dustin Walsh here on Detroit Today. And we are going to get to more of your stories. How are you feeling 1 year into this pandemic? Talk about what you were doing when you first heard what was happening and that cases had come to Michigan, and how did it change your life dramatically? The number on the lines is 313-577-1019. Again, that's 313-577-1019. Annette in Detroit, you're next after this.
news, music,
culture,
and community.
Every day
on 101.9 WDET.
Detroit's NPR station.
You're listening to Detroit Today on 101.9 WDET. I'm Jake Neer in for Stephen Henderson today on the one-year anniversary of the first confirmed cases of coronavirus being announced here in Michigan. We are talking about that all hour today, and right now we're joined by Dustin Walsh, who covers economic issues for Crain's Detroit Business. He wrote a piece in Crain's titled The Week When Everything Changed and How the Business Community Lived It. A little later, we'll talk with Lena Sun with the Washington Post about what people can do and what they still shouldn't do if they're fully vaccinated. But we really want to hear your stories all hour about how this year has played out for you and your life. The number on the lines is 313-577-1019. And Dustin, you know, before we get back to the phones, I wanted to let you finish the what you were talking about right before the break. You were talking about Ron Hall, who is the CEO, the president and CEO of Detroit-based automotive seating supplier Bridgewater Interiors, and who's also, as you mentioned, an Army veteran of the Gulf War. And something about that story that really stuck out to me and sort of gripped me was the. It seems like he is still racked with guilt in some ways a year later, now talking about whether he should have stopped production sooner, you know, the second guessing a lot of the decisions that he made there. And I think that as we were talking about, that is sort of emblematic of a lot of the early days for business owners, especially here in Michigan, that they were the ones that were forced to make these decisions. But talk a little bit more about that conversation that you had with Ron Hall and sort of, again, that second guessing that it seems like he's still doing today.
Yeah, you could tell in the interview. I mean, he's obviously a thoughtful person and truly seems to care about his workforce. But he was scared for his own safety when he was in there. So he, you know, he kept thinking, well, if I'm scared for my own safety, what am I doing to my employees? You know, but again, they had orders, you know, from you know, their customers to produce seats, and the industry wasn't shut down. And you know, and he, as he said, he's like, you know, he had no misgivings about doing it. Like, you know, he was faced with a terrible decision, and he claims he flinched. You know, he's like, I did what I was supposed to do, what everyone else was doing. You know, he said he was reluctant to push the red button. But yeah, he's definitely racked with some guilt. You know, he had some people get very sick, and I think he feels bad about that and felt that, well, if I had raised my hand earlier and said, we can't do this anymore, you know, could those people have been spared? Mm-hmm. And I think it's a little unfair to put it on him as well or anyone else, because we didn't know what was happening.
Sure. Right.
No one knew.
CEOs are not, epidemiologists. You know.
Right. And there's, so they're just part of the system that's working to basically produce, you know, products and money. And so he, you know, he. But as I said, you'll forever wonder whether he should have raised his hand and said the risk is too high. We're done. Mm. And you know, as he said, for the rest of his career, he'll wonder if that was the biggest mistake he's ever made.
Yeah.
And I think you know. People are asking themselves those questions, right? Like, I went to Disney World on March 12th, which is obviously pales in comparison to anything Ron Hall did. But you know, I was terrified. And you know, luckily no one got sick. But if someone did, I would have regretted going for the rest of my life.
Sure. Well, the number on the lines again is 313-577-1019. You can also leave your comments and stories on Twitter using the hashtag Detroit Today. I want to go to Annette now in Detroit. Annette, welcome to Detroit Today.